Thank you. Sorry about that. So we're talking about James. James deals with several challenges that will develop when instead of living our life by faith and serving the Lord, we allow ourselves to walk after the behavior of men. And with everything that we've talked about through the course of time and study the scriptures, everything begins with the internal man. We've kind of talked about this before with Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Talks about the renewing of our mind is what is so crucial. Because fundamentally, our faith, our conviction, must begin within our hearts, within our mind. And if our faith and conviction begins within our mind, then it will have a direct effect on the outward way that we live our lives. Now, when you think about your life, just in general, yourself, and you were to define your body like a chain with many links within that chain, which would you think would be your weakest link? Now, I'm not talking about pain, you know, sore joints and stuff like that. In behavioral patterns, where would you think is the weakest link? All right, let me define this a little bit more. You are in a very intense situation. Maybe your patience is being tried. You've been in a really bad mood and somebody challenges you on something. Let's say, I don't know, police officer pulls you over or something. And at that moment, everything is ramped up within your mind. What do you think is the hardest thing to control at that moment in time? Speaking personally, it's what we say. Okay? How many times have you within your life said, I shouldn't have said that. I should have kept my big fat mouth shut. Okay? For the moment, it seemed, yeah, I'm going to say this and I'm going to get it out there and I'm going to lay it out there because I need to say it. And then you're like, boy, I wish I hadn't said that. And by the way, this isn't a lesson on marriage. Don't think that it is. Talk about how we deal with people in general. Our speech is the weakest link. Now, some people are very violent, all right? And so they may react like that. We're talking about the normal average person. When you are pushed to the limit, And we're talking in a negative fashion, and I'll bring that in just a moment when I'm talking about it from that particular standpoint. That's going to be the weakest link. Say something you shouldn't, okay? Meddle in other person's business. 2 Timothy chapter 3 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 deals with that. Someone being a busybody in other people's affairs. Well, that involves talking, doesn't it? Anger. Let's turn over to Colossians 3. I said James 3. We'll come back here in just a moment. Kind of laying a foundation here for what we're going to be looking at here in just a moment. Colossians 3 is a great example of this. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Colossae, would focus with me here for just a moment there. Let's pick up in verse 8. Verse 8 through verse 11, he's now telling them things they need to continue to put away, things they need to put off within their lives. He says, but now you yourselves are to put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Let's stop there. Does that sound like the weak link we've been talking about? Okay. Now, I will grant you this. It all begins in the heart, within the mind. Okay. It starts there. But this is where the weak link is, where the lack of control allow something to come forth that should not be there. In this case in point, it's talking about anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, things that are hurtful, things that are harmful. But verse 9 brings in a whole other aspect of this. Do not lie to one another, since you put off the old man with his deeds. There's another area of weak link, all right, within what we say. Now, it's connected with something different than the anger aspect. Lying could be connected with pride. Lying could be connected with not wanting to get in trouble. All right. Just a number of things there you could connect that with, but it's still the weak link. So he says, do not lie to one another, since you put off the old man with his deeds and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him. Okay. So therein lies the idea of keeping control over ourselves and not letting the weak link be the weak link. Now, you might say to yourself, well, if I had to control everything I had to say, I would be perfect. Well, that's what James says. But the word means mature. And we'll get to that here in just a minute. Another passage, 2 Timothy chapter 2. Here's another instance of where the weak link develops. Now, this may not stem from anger. This may not stem from pride and jealousy. But let's pick up here in verse 14 of 2 Timothy chapter 2. And we're going to read through verse... For now, let's just read through verse 18. That should be sufficient for this point. Remind them of these things, charging them before the Lord not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. So now we have the danger of striving about words. So it may not be lying. It may not be something said out of anger. And it may not be said, you know, something that was said trying to lie or deceive, you know, something like that. But here, now we got a point to make. And so now we're going to strive about words. He says, don't do that. Charging them before the Lord not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. Be diligent, verse 15, to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness, and their message will spread like cancer. Hymenaeus and Philetus are of this sort, who have strayed concerning the truth, saying that the resurrection is already past, for they overthrow the faith of some. Now here we're talking about someone who speaks false teaching, or who's striving over words that end up for the ruin of the hearer. So we come back now to where I want to kind of settle down for a moment at, is James chapter 3. So James chapter 3, he begins beginning in verse 1. And let's go ahead and read as we read earlier for the scripture reading. He says, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole tongue, the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. Now, we'll stop there. We'll come back to the text here in just a second. He makes a statement there that at first sounds very discouraging. When he says there, going back to verse 1, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. Now, there was, we're going to use the term office, and I don't want to, not in the same sense as the office of a deacon or an elder, but there was a role within the church in the first century known as teachers. All right, and when you look at different passages, you think especially about Paul's letter to the church at Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4, starting there in verse 11, we know that within the church there was that role known as teachers. And so one commentary kind of suggests the idea here is that people were striving to be in this more admirable position, trying to put off the appearance and try to hold not to the responsibility of teaching, to helping people to grow, but to be a teacher and admired by all. But whichever way he's talking, whether it's that or just in general, the warning here goes much farther than simply be careful what you say in the role of being a teacher. He does talk about that, but as we go on later, we find that ultimately it has to do with the controlling of what we say in general, whether we are teaching or we're saying something else. Follow along. I'll show you why we say that here. So he says, for we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Now, go back to what we said. What's the weakest link? Our weakest link oftentimes is the control of our tongue, what we say. If we can gain control over the very words that we say, and it's the idea of let's think first, speak later, be quick to hear, slow to speak, and so forth. It is the idea of thinking through what we're going to say before we say it. Why do people lie? They don't think about what they're saying. They have an intent, a desire behind what they're saying. They don't stop and process the fact that what they're saying is wrong. Why do people speak out of anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of their mouths? Because they don't stop, or at least maybe they do stop and think, and that's why it's more focused on what they say. But typically, they don't stop to think about what they're saying. The idea is just as you would control your hand to pick up the spoon and to take a bite of the ice cream, or you take the knife and you're going to go and cut the steak, or you're going to grab the axe and cut the wood. Everything is very controlled and precise with all the other aspects, most of the other aspects of your body, even walking. But the tongue, the what we say, many times will fire before the brain slows down to say, stop. We're quick to say the first thing that's on our mind. And so we're talking about control. It goes back to the very idea that he's talking about in Colossians chapter 3. You could also bring Ephesians 4. It goes back to us having put on the new man. And therefore, that new man exercises control, controls the body in conjunction with what God has told us. If we stumble, we stumble, we all stumble in many things, verse 2 says. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. I have a footnote in this New King James Version that says he is the footnote is mature man. Not thinking about as perfect as sinless, never making any problems, but a maturity. Okay? Children do not control their speech until they become more mature. Okay? That's why they say funny things when they're little. But as we get older, we're supposed to, with maturity, have a greater control. So he uses an example, though. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Big horse, big animal, small little bit. Okay? The idea there. Look also at ships. Big ship, large ship, small tiny rudder by comparison, and it goes wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is little member and boasts great things. Okay? It's a little member, but man, it gets us into trouble so often. All right? As a kid, I got into trouble a lot. You know, one of my biggest problems as a kid was, one, I didn't know when to be quiet. The whole back-talking phase. Went through a phase of lying, and it was stupid stuff. Finally got that taught out of me. And the third thing, I'd mock my mother. Okay, so I forgot about this till my sisters reminded me. There was one time in particular that we were getting lectured, all three of us. And Mom looked away, and I just like started mouthing and mocking her and everything. She turned around and saw me. Then I got in trouble for that too. She was very big on respecting and showing respect, rightfully so too. But the point is, as a kid, you know, I knew it was stupid, but it was more fun than stupid until I realized how stupid it was. Okay. So maturity, as we grow up, brings us to the point to where we should be controlling this little thing. Now, what's James's point as we go through here? Well, you know, a little bit later in chapter 4, we won't get there. There's divisions. There's conflicts that arises within congregations. And oftentimes, what's the source of that? Well, somebody said something. Okay? That's where it comes from. Back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. He talks about those who go around being busybodies. Actually, also, he encourages, Paul does, widows to marry. All right? So they don't become the same as well. And so, he says then, coming back to the text now, even so, the tongue, verse 5, is little member and boasts great things. Now look at this interesting example. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. We know that today. They knew it back then. So let's build on that illustration, beginning in verse 6. He says, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Now, we'll pause there for just a moment. Verse 9 is very significant. We'll bring that in here in just a minute. So, what is the basis for this statement that he just made? Well, I mean, if we wanted to get very secular with it, wouldn't you say that all wars at some point began with someone said something or another? Now, it's not that overly simplified, obviously, but it has to do with communication. The division within the church at Corinth, what did it stem from? Well, it stemmed from the heart of some who were causing the division. And here, what we read a while ago, and Paul writing to the church in Ephesus, they're warning them about Hymenaeus and Philetus there. But it's through the words that were spoken that causes great problems. Families, relationships, people you work with, friendships. So many things can be undone overnight by a careless word. And if you add to that unforgiveness, unwillingness to forgive, then it just begins to expound. If you add jealousy, if you add revenge and anything like that, it just begins to add on top of that. And so what he's describing here is the potential. And it has been seen time and time and time again. If you would go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, what did the devil, in the form of the serpent, do to Eve? He talked. He spoke to her. And she listened to his spoken words. He describes it in a very graphic way to help the brethren understand the potential of what could go wrong if you don't exercise control over the things that you say. Now, if you exercise control over the things that you say, you exercise, hopefully, control over your heart, and you'll exercise control over everything else. There are two aspects of sin that oftentimes we see. Let me mention this, and then we'll continue forward. There are two extremes that are built upon emotions. One extreme is going to be the Greek word eros, okay? It is the, we're going to say, to put it simply, the infatuation between a man and a woman, okay? Those emotions of love, okay, have gotten so many people in trouble. Go back to King David as an example, okay? So what happens is there is no control when this aspect of your emotion begins to run rampant. And if there's no control over it, then look at the damage and where you go to from there. Now, emotion. We come back over here to anger, wrath, malice, and envy. It's still emotion-based. This is based on some sort of lust. Call it love, but many times this is based on lust. Over here, it could be based on jealousy. Any number of things. But either way, as Christians, we have these two challenges within our life, and we have to make certain that our heart is right and shaped with God so that we can say no when we need to say no. We can say calm down when we need to say calm down and not allow ourselves to give in to sin. So if we have the wisdom to understand the need to control the very words that we say, then will we not then control everything else, or at least have the ability to control all the other areas where the devil will come in and tempt us within our lives? Going back to chapter 1, we won't take time to read this, but James had previously covered that we are drawn away by our own desires and enticed. And then when that desire gives birth to sin, then we have that death, spiritual separation from God that comes into our life because we let the desire rule us. And in this case in point, he's telling them not to let the tongue rule them. Verse 8, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. That passage, when I was younger, really gave me some issues because it sounds like then it's an impossibility. But look at it from a little bit different standpoint. Mankind has tamed many creatures. But has mankind himself ever tamed the tongue? Okay. I don't think the writer here is telling us that we are looking at an impossibility and a have to sin within our life. He's warning them of the dangers that can come if we don't exercise control. Man cannot tame the tongue. But I do believe that as children of God, if we abide in the fellowship of the Lord in accordance to His Word, and we stop and we are, as He says, quick to hear and slow to speak, then yes, we can. Verse 9, with it, now let's read 9 through 12. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. He says in verse 10, out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? He says, thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Now we find out what the problem is here. It wasn't so much about someone wanting to be a teacher and they might say something wrong. Well, I can't teach because if I do, what if I say something wrong? I'm going to be held accountable for that. That's not the context here. The context here is someone who is professing to serve the Lord, professing to follow the Lord, but yet not exercising control over the very things that they say. And if you don't exercise control over the things that you say, you're not exercising control out of your heart, over your heart. He shows the conflict here, or the contrast. He says there, with it we bless God and Father. We stand over here, praise the Lord. But I got a huge problem with Dell. Let me tell you about it. I really don't, but you see the point? We stand up here, let's all pray, and we all say amen at the close of the prayer, and afterwards, I got to tell you, I got to be careful who I pick on, don't I? Let me tell you what I heard about so-and-so. Or maybe we say, here's the preacher preaching, God is a loving God, He's rich in His mercy and His kindness, and then I'm pulling out of the parking lot, and you nearly run me off the road, and I roll down the window and swear at you. See the problem? Okay. It's easy to put on a good front, but when the weak link is challenged and tested and tried, if we don't have control over it, then we allow ourselves then to give in to sin. So he says, and this is the great point he makes here. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. This is in context of either speaking favorably, where you say the things that you should be saying, and then at the same time you say the things you should not be saying. You utter cursings. He says, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same openings? No. Salt water, fresh water, same opening? Absolutely not. Okay? One water source, one water type flows from that. And so when we seek to serve the Lord and follow Him, what should be coming forth from our mouth? Things that are proper, things that are wholesome, things that edify, things that teach, not things that tear down, not things that belittle, not things that are formed out of heart of jealousy and a heart of anger. Now, real quick, beginning in verse 13, let's read to the end of the chapter. What's the solution? Where do we turn? Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Okay? Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. That's the source that enables us to exercise the control the writer's talking about. Not just over our tongue, but over the whole of our life. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, notice that again, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This kind of goes back to this idea of out of the same mouth flows blessings and cursings. He says, if you've got bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, then don't boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above. He's talking about what he just said in verse 15. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. Now I come back to a discussion about the tongue. What are the sources of a tongue that goes awry and speaks and says things that it ought not, whether we're talking about false doctrine or we're talking about something out of some sort of strong emotion, anger? Where is the source of this coming from? Or what is its source? He says in verse 16, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. That's why he says in verse 13, let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness of wisdom, not being driven by envy and self-seeking. 17 now. But the wisdom that is from above, not the wisdom from man, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. One more example. Don't know if it'll work very well, but let's give it a try. So they have this, I can't remember now what they call the device. But if you are out hiking, or maybe you're stranded in the woods, and the only source of water you can find is water that is impure, okay? It's muddy, it's whatever. You don't know if it's safe to drink. They do have a filter system you carry with you that you can put that water in, and it makes the water drinkable, okay? Examples are only good if I can remember why we went there in the first place. Think about that for a moment. What is muddied, what is dirty, can now be made drinkable by this device. Well, back to 17. If we rely upon the wisdom of God, we filter out of our lives the things that the world would put into it. We put out of our hearts the motives that the world would put into it. The envy, the self-seeking, those things are pushed away. They're replaced by our love for God and therefore the wisdom of God. And he says that it is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Let this filter the words of our hearts and of our mind. Let this filter out the things that the world would have us to say, the things that maybe temptation is wanting us to say, and make certain that only what comes forth from our hearts and our minds and our mouth is, as he describes here, pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good works, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now verse 18, now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And that statement kind of will then lend to the next chapter. The churches in the first century, no different than congregations today. The congregations are made up of very flawed people who are forgiven by God. And we come together to serve Him and worship Him together. Sometimes the influence of the world can come in, and congregations can face problems and issues and challenges. It happened in Corinth. It happened in all the congregations in the first century. And it's the temptation, the problem potential is always there. But the way we overcome this, the way that any group of Christians who assemble together to worship the Lord, work together to overcome it, is by having the selflessness, by having the love for God, by seeking the welfare and the well-being of one another, and exercising control over what we say. But what if, just for the moment, what if you say something, or better yet, me, in a moment of anger and despair and upset, I say something that you find very hurtful? Well, then there's the other aspect of the coin. The relationship that we have with one another because of the love of Christ then allows for forgiveness and reconciliation, as long as the hearts are humble and we are striving first to serve the Lord. James 3 is a very interesting chapter. It really is, because it touches on what could be the greatest weakness within our life. And it kind of serves as a great guide. What we say, consider everything you say. Some people don't listen at all to what they say. They just like babble. You know, you say blue, and then they'll go for 2 minutes about something or another and say, "What'd you say?" "I don't know. I was just talking." But let's stop and think about what we say, and let that be a measure. And if we say something, we do something that we know hurtful, whatever, calls us in, calls us problem, whatever, then step back and say, okay, where did that come from? Now let's start process of repair. Let us ask God to forgive us and move forward from there. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting chapter, something good to look at, and very, very applicable in the life of any child of God. But if you are not yet a child of God, you need to become one. Jesus Christ came and died upon the cross of Calvary so that you can be saved. Our prayer is that you'll study the Word and gain the conviction to be able to profess your belief that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and be buried with Him in baptism, so you rise up then to walk in the newness of life and then live the rest of your days in humble service unto Him. If you are a Christian and you've not been living faithfully, maybe this is a weak link within your life. But if so, just acknowledge it and ask God to forgive you. Pray for assistance. If you need the prayers of the congregation, we'll be happy to pray for you. But understand that we must first identify the challenge within our own life before we can truly turn back to the Lord and begin to make that change. If you accept to the gospel's call and invitation, come forward as we stand and as we sing.